Hello?
What's your least favorite scary movie?
It's showtime! Welcome to What's Your Least Favorite Scary Movie, the podcast where we talk about our least favorite aspects and most debatable opinions of our most favorite scary movies.
We fight over our favorites.
My name's Jesse.
My name's Travis.
And we are continuing our month-long adventure of exposing one another to movies we may not have seen before. This week it's my turn. And we finally got Travis to watch Beetlejuice. We did it, guys.
Yeah, I can finally answer the question, have you watched Beetlejuice, and not be ashamed of myself anymore.
A question he gets daily.
It feels like it sometimes. The amount of shit that you get, especially if you tell people that you're a horror movie fan, that you like spooky movies, if they find out you haven't watched Beetlejuice, they give you way more shit than usual, and it's understandable. I get it. It's a classic, but
it's very much mandatory viewing at this point.
Yeah, there's a lot of mandatory viewing that I've not seen yet, so
we'll get there. So I'm gonna go ahead and first disclose that Travis and I both had a very nasty virus earlier this week. We are doing a lot better, but I'm still recovering, so if anything sounds off, that's just a little bit of an explanation for why. So just want everybody to know we don't hate you. We don't hate this movie. We're just, I'm very tired still. We ran like three errands and it took everything out of me. So, yeah. But we have this movie on DVD. It has a slipcover, which Travis is a big fan of. So that at least makes up for it not being a fancy 4K.
Yeah, I was, that is an option out there, and I've been holding off waiting to know if it's worth the investment. It's a cheap 4K, so it's not like, you know, I'm going to be dropping big bucks on it or anything, but.
So what is the verdict, Travis? Is this going to be worth the 4K upgrade?
Yeah, I think so.
Sweet.
I did like this movie a lot. Like, I get why it's a classic. It's different than I expected it to be, though. It didn't go the direction that I thought it was going to.
Okay, I'm excited to talk about that in just a little bit.
Okay.
But the DVD we have, it was one of those that I got, like, on sale. It was something like $5 or something at Target, maybe.
Yeah, it was super cheap.
And I was really excited to get it. Hadn't been able to get you to watch it before now, but now we finally did it.
It sat on the shelf a full year without us even watching it.
Yeah, tragically. And it has a couple, like, it doesn't have like any behind the scenes features, but one feature I really did like is it has a 3 full length episodes of Beetlejuice the cartoon.
Yeah, that is really cool that they add that on there. I mean, yeah, it's like a 20th anniversary edition is what it is, so it has to have a little bit of something. So, you know,
yeah,
for a $5 DVD, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. So this movie was directed most notoriously by Tim Burton. The story was by Michael McDowell and Larry Wilson, and the screenplay was by Michael McDowell and Warren Scarron. The music was by Danny Elfman.
Obviously.
Very obviously. Yeah. They had a budget of $15 million with a worldwide gross of about $74.2 million.
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Starring Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice, Gina Davis as Barbara, Alec Baldwin as Adam, Winona Ryder as Lydia, Catherine O'Hara as Delia, and Jeffrey Jones as Charles. So a few quick fun facts about this movie. The reason Michael McDowell he actually was replaced on the screenplay. His first few drafts were very, very dark, a much different movie tonally than what it started off, or than what Tim Burton wanted it to be. So he ended up bringing in Warren Scarron to help with adding in some of that more lighthearted humor. And because Tim Burton said he wanted it to be a lighthearted celebration of the macabre.
Whose movie is this? Like, who came up with the idea for it originally? Did they approach Tim Burton, or did Tim Burton, like, reach out to these people and, like, can you write this movie for me?
I'm not sure what the whole process was. I didn't find that information.
Okay, it sounds like it's that if he has the control to be like, yeah, I'm going to need somebody different.
I mean,
that's what it sounds like to me, at least. Like, if he's having that say, I mean, Tim Burton was kind of like a big director at the time, too, I guess. I think. I don't know what all he had at that point.
This movie actually is what got him the director job for Batman.
Oh, really? So then he's like, yeah, I'll take another Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
It's weird. I mean, it works. The guy's got range.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is actually Michael Keaton's favorite of his own films.
I could see this being the most fun for him.
Yeah.
Compared to anything else that he's done.
Oh, yeah. This is kind of an off-the-wall character, so.
Yeah.
According to IMDb, so take this with a grain of salt. I couldn't find collaboration anywhere else on the internet. Granted, I had a really hard time finding actual, like, written interviews and stuff for it because it's an older movie. I was finding mostly reviews.
Oh, yeah.
But apparently he ad-libbed, like, a good percentage of his lines. And I don't know. That's a lot to ad-lib, but...
Yeah, it's weird for me because my experiences with him have been in more serious roles. Like, I guess you can call... I mean, Batman's kind of a serious character, even if it's Tim Burton. So, you know, he still plays it pretty straight in that. But then I've seen him in Spider-Man. It's so stupid that I'm talking about comic book movies for his serious roles. But
I mean...
he plays like a straight-up serious dude in Spider-Man. He's, like, intimidating in that movie. I'm going to see him
he's
like...
the bad guy, right?
Yeah, he's a bad guy.
Spoiler alert for a, what, five-year-old movie?
Yeah, it's been a while. But he's so animated in this with his movement and everything. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. He actually is only on screen for 14 and a half minutes.
That's another thing that's one of the reasons why I thought it was going to be way different.
Yeah. Well, it kind of made me think about the parallel we have with Robert Englund in Nightmare on Elm Street.
What?
He was only on screen for, I want to say it was almost less than 10 minutes of the first Nightmare
Seriously?
On Elm Street. Yeah. We went over that.
It's been so long since we talked about that.
That's true.
That's crazy.
True. Let's see. Again, this was something I found on IMDb, and I just forgot to double-check it elsewhere on the internet while I was double-checking other facts. But supposedly, this was the first DVD sent out by Netflix.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, so
that's
kind of
cool.
Boy,
I forgot that Netflix did that.
I know. Children, once upon a time, Netflix sent out physical media.
It was so cool, too. I used that shit all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it went to streaming, and everybody's like, I don't know about this. And now it's like, DVDs?
I remember hearing about the streaming thing. It's like, is that a thing that is just like actually possible? Like, it just kind of blew my mind that was a way you could actually watch stuff.
It kind of makes me think about when libraries started renting out ebooks.
Yeah.
It's a very similar type of premise, because I'm like, the libraries do books, but yeah, they can do ebooks.
It still blows my mind.
Yeah. And one other fun fact that this was collaborated multiple places is that Warner Bros. Hated the name Beetlejuice. They hated the title. They kept begging Tim Burton to change it. He did not want to change the title. They suggested things like House Ghosts, and he gave them like a really dumb name, Scared Sheetless.
Oh, God.
And the studio actually loved it. He was worried that they were going to like push through the name change.
That's, wow. Those all sound like B-horror movies that are kind of like garbage but fun.
Oh my God, if we were scrolling through Tubi and I saw something called Scared Sheetless, I'd be like, Travis, now, stop.
Yeah.
So those are my immediate fun facts. Now I must ask you, Travis. First impressions, pre-discussion. What ranking are you giving this movie?
I'm going to give it an 8.
Wow.
I scared Jessie last night whenever she asked. She's like, I don't want to get into discussion because we try and keep it fresh for the podcast. We don't really talk about these things in advance. And she's like, but what did you think? And I was just like, I hated it.
Except he sounded way more serious than that.
He was like, I hated it. It sucked.
And I almost cried, and then he was like, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm giving this an 8 as well. So.
An 8? Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I thought you would have given it something higher, but that's cool. I'm glad that we enjoyed it equally.
Yeah. You're going to make it difficult to argue about it, but I'm sure we'll find things to nitpick.
We know that's the premise of the show, but this is a different month, different theme. So.
I'm sure we will have different things about the movie that we disagree work or don't work.
Oh, yeah. There'll be disagreements.
That always happens.
That's true.
So.
Okay.
Can still fight over a favorite.
That's true. Yes. Yeah.
So what did you like about it?
I really liked his character. And like I said, he was... I didn't really laugh out loud a lot. There were a couple of times where I kind of like giggled out loud. Or, I don't know. It's... I guess I wouldn't say giggle. I chuckled. It's just, yeah, it was fun just seeing his character be so like crazy and animated. I was really impressed with his voice, the way he's able to like get his voice in such a weird place. But
apparently he conceptualized a lot of the character.
Yeah.
The direction he was given is that he is a specified to every time period and no time period.
That's all he was given, basically.
That was like a lot for him to go off of, so he decided to have the like shocked looking hair and the moss and the giant teeth.
Gotcha. That's cool. Yeah, I mean, it works with Tim Burton's style, and that's another thing. I like Tim Burton's style, like visually, the way that you can like I can see his drawings, the way that he draws things, and it is portrayed so well on film all the time for him. I don't know how he does it, but like the little guy in the waiting room with his shrunken head.
Yeah.
You know, that's such a Tim Burton looking character.
Their faces near the end.
Yeah.
When they're about to go back, they like elongate their faces.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. So they did a fun job with that. It was just a fun movie. And like for you, it's kind of all in one setting too. So I can see why that's something that you would enjoy about it.
Yeah. I love that I'm a big fan of horror comedy, as we all know. And this is one of the ones that just does it so fucking well, because it truly is a delight to watch. Like, it's fun to watch, but it's also dealing with very heavy, dark shit.
Yeah, and there's a lot of dark material in this for it to be a PG movie.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's like baby's first horror movie type thing, you know? But I think that and this is kind of a general approach I typically have to life, is I have a bit of my own macabre humor that I use to get me through, you know.
No, yeah.
Maybe not such a great moments.
I've experienced it.
Yeah. But I think it's, you know, death is a part of life, and kind of having this playful look at what happens after you die, like kind of the other side of a ghost story. And I know there have been other movies that have come out since then that kind of focus from the ghost point of view. Mm-hmm. But they didn't know they were ghosts. But I think, I don't know. I think it's a fun and playful look at it, but also it's dealing with like very real types of things that exist in the world. You know, we've got death, obviously, and it's not just death by accident. Like, you see in the afterlife, there's also depictions of murder and there's depictions of suicide, and that's some heavy shit. We have the living characters are very not great people necessarily. We've got Delia, who is just completely up her own asshole. And
you know who she reminded me of?
Who?
The character from the most recent season of Slasher.
Oh god, yeah,
because she even kind of looks like her, but it's all up. They're both artists that are like obsessing over their own art.
Yeah, I can just see self-absorbed that.
Yeah. Wow. Maybe they got the inspiration for that character from that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Wow, okay, you just blew my mind. We got Charles, who's this kind of like checked out dad, doesn't really care too much about his daughter, what's going on in her life. She's clearly like miserable and apathetic, and you know, she definitely has that sense of being an outcast.
Is she like a high schooler in this? Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, and Winona Ryder herself was a high schooler.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure. I mean, sometimes they write these characters younger or older, you know. She looked like she could have been oldish, but she was, you know, she could play young too.
Yeah, I mean, she was 17 when this movie came out, so.
Yeah, you mentioned this is when, like, Heathers came out,
too. Yes, same Heathers year. Came out the same year. Yeah. So, in my head, the whole time, this was after Heathers. Like, yes. She fucked on out of that town and was like, all right, cool, I'm going to I'm going to go over here instead.
Yeah. Instead of killing people, she's living with ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah. She still has like the scribbly journaling.
Yeah.
Scribbly melodramatic journaling. And
yeah. All she's super melodramatic in this movie. Yeah.
Goth queen. Yeah. And like her, like those, you know, even her themes are dealing with some really dark stuff. That whole sense of kind of apathy towards life, frustration with your surroundings, not wanting to be alive anymore. That's dark. That's heavy.
Yeah.
And for them to just kind of like throw it in there, and it's all blended in such a way that it like has its heartfelt moments, especially the relationship between Lydia, Barbara, and Adam. Like seeing that was really heartwarming.
Yeah.
And seeing how like clearly impactful that sense of, that kind of a sense of chosen family a little bit. It's weird to say that with ghosts, but you know, it's there. That was really nice to see. And like, it's hinted at that before they died, Barbara and Adam were struggling to have a child of their own.
Yeah, I noticed.
And it's not, none of these things are really ever particularly dwelled upon. They're treated as just kind of a normal aspect of life because they are. And then we get Beetlejuice's character, who is gross. He is sexually assaultive. He is amoral in terms of his dealings and the way he goes about his business. But he's played in such a way that it feels lighthearted, and he's like a character you like to see on screen, even though you know he is the bad guy of this movie.
Yeah.
So I think all of it is just, it's so well balanced, and to have a movie that can have these types of themes and just be enjoyable to watch is great.
Yeah, I agree.
So
cool.
All right. Are we ready to hop right into it?
Showtime.
Okay, so we start off immediately traumatizing Travis because there's a spider attacking the model village.
Yeah.
And Alec Baldwin just picks it up.
Which seeing Alec Baldwin also traumatized me, because I'm like, that's fucking Alec Baldwin. It does not look anything like him.
It does not look anything like him. And we're talking about it because all we can associate him with now is his portrayal as a certain ex-president on SNL.
Not only that, just like, he's physically a different person.
Yeah.
Like, you could, he's, there's like remnants of it in his face, but everything else about him is just completely different. Yeah,
it's weird
different.
To think. It was over 30 years ago. It's weird to think that this movie is that old.
Well, I try and think of him because, you know, he's on Friends too, and he kind of looks like his normal self on that too. And Friends isn't too far off from this movie.
But his appearance on Friends was in the early 2000s, though.
No, it was?
Yeah, so more than 10 years had passed by at that point.
Oh, I thought it was a little bit sooner. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so he releases the spider out into the world. I guess this is meant to show that they are peaceful, happy people. Barbara comes in. She's gotten Adam some tongue oil. T-U-N-G, no clue what that means. I'm glad we have subtitles, because if I'd heard tongue oil, I would have been like, what the hell is that?
I imagine it's got something to do with the miniatures.
Yes, because he said he can finish up a lot of things. He got her like wallpaper or something?
Wallpaper.
Yeah, so they're on vacation, but they're spending it at home. They're clearly gonna do some home renovations, which seems to be a thing they actually like to do as a hobby. So good for them. Good staycation energy. I appreciate it. What I don't appreciate and what they don't appreciate is Jane coming by being like, "Hey, you ready to sell your house yet?" And they're like, "What the fuck? No."
Not only that though, it's also 6:30 in the morning, is what they say.
Like, okay, first of all, they're slightly psychotic for being up at 6:30 on their vacation week.
Yeah, that's
and they've been up. I'm not a morning person. I respect people that do that, but to just be that cheerful at 6:30 in the morning, I generally don't trust those types of people.
Like, ready to go into full on renovation mode at 6:30 in the morning.
That's intense.
It is intense. And they don't really appreciate the intensity of Jane, which I can understand, because like, for somebody, she's showing up to their house because she's trying to sell their house.
And it doesn't sound like they want to sell, so I feel like legally that's sketchy.
Yeah, and do they is it established that if they have a further relationship, are they family?
I don't know. I don't remember that being established at all, because when she pulls up, Adam's like, "Oh God, here's Jane. It's your turn to deal with her."
Yeah, so they have like an extended history with him, I think. Yeah. Or unless it's just this person constantly harassing them to sell their house, which, you know, that would be really fucking annoying. And
Yeah, she's like sending pictures of the house to people.
Yeah, it's a nice house too.
It is a nice house. It's really big. And then she just jumps from being a bad realtor to being a bad person by saying, "Oh, well, it's a shame that this house isn't going to somebody with a family."
Yeah,
which that's like, two married people can be a family.
Yeah, exactly.
Two roommates who are very close friends can be a family. A woman and her cat can be a family. You know what I mean? Family doesn't have to mean like man, woman, 2.5 children. Like, that's unrealistic. Where
the
fuck does
the 0.5 come from?
Averages.
That's dumb. Just say two kids.
Why are you leaving out the half kid? What did Belial do to you, Travis? Oh,
fuck. Belial was the half, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That's a rare... And I mean, even Belial doesn't want to be. He's being carried around in a basket. No, actually, he wants out.
Yeah.
They just tried to hide him. That's a discussion for a different episode. Yeah, that will be talked about, I'm sure.
But yeah, so anyway, it's just, and it's clear that, like, you're right. She must have some sort of, like, relationship with him. That, or it's just that it's a small town.
It could be that, too.
Because, yeah.
But she shows up to, like, pay respects after they die, too.
She shows up to put the for sale sign up in front of the house.
Oh, is that what she was doing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Or to like mark that it's sold or something. I don't know. Time is a little bit squishy in this movie.
It's super squishy.
Yeah, because apparently afterlife, death, after death. Wait, what?
Time in the afterlife.
Thank you.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's on a completely different plane.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
So
But they're like, they're very adamant that they're not going to sell. They want their house. They like their house. They're on vacation. So please don't bother us anymore this week. Thank you very much. And then they're going to go to town to pick up supplies for their nerdy little hobbies. And while they're in town, so he goes to, it's like a hobby store or something right next to a barber shop. And the barber's out front talking to Adam, asking him if he wants a haircut. And he's like, "No, I'm just here to pick up whatever it is." And the barber starts talking, and Adam just, like, walks in, doesn't even, like, try and divert the conversation, just walks in, barber keeps on chatting, he comes back out, the barber's still chatting the whole time, and I just thought that was hilarious, because there are those people that sometimes you just have to, like, all right, I'm going.
He also does the thing, like, from House of Wax, too, where he goes in there and just gets what he wants, and then puts the money in the register.
Oh, I didn't even make a note about that.
Yeah, it's a small town shit.
Yeah, especially, like, if he's... you know, a well-known hobbyist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I can see that being like a thing. So they're driving back. There's a dog on the bridge. They swerve to avoid the dog.
That dog made me nervous in the first scene too,
when they're pulling in. When they're pulling in, it's running in the street.
Yeah, it's right in front of the car. Like, I wouldn't... good boy, good dog actor, but I wouldn't trust having a dog right there next to a car that's pulling in.
Oh my God, yeah.
It just makes me nervous seeing anything like that.
I couldn't imagine, like, being them having to pretend drive the car with the dog in front.
You have to get
this.
A stunt driver for that scene.
I feel like I cannot do this. It's in my contract. I'm not emotionally strong enough for this.
And then you get this fucking asshole that's just like speeding in there.
But yeah, well, the dog, I hate to say this, but the dog is kind of an asshole in this moment.
The dog doesn't know what it doesn't know any better. It just stands there, and then they swerve out of the way through the bridge.
Well, they're hanging off the bridge for a second. There's like a board wedged underneath them, and the dog is standing on the edge of it, and they look at the dog, and the dog looks at them.
It's Talia energy.
Yeah. And it just steps off the board, and their car crashes.
Killed him teeter-totter style.
Yeah. it's rough. You know, though, it is nice to see a horror movie where the dog kills somebody instead of the other way around.
That's true. There's a whole movie just for that, remember? Good Boy.
Oh, okay. I thought you were about to say Cujo, and I was like, Cujo's sad.
No.
We will never, ever, ever talk about Cujo on this podcast. I will never watch the movie Cujo.
I have no interest either.
I read the book. I laid in bed for a week after. Never again.
Sounds terrible. But yeah, this is... I went into this movie completely blind. So I had no idea what was happening.
And yeah, it was funny because when the movie first started, like right when we were popping it in, Travis goes, so are there actually any deaths in this movie? Because he noted that it was PG.
Well, you told me, you're like, because, you know, it was her pick and she's like, I don't know if people are going to consider this a horror movie.
I mean, there are plenty of people who do consider it a horror movie. A lot of online listings do not list it as a horror movie, which is weird because it's won horror-based awards.
Yeah, I mean, I would call it one, especially after watching it. I would
it's definitely a horror comedy, but like if you pull it up on like Wikipedia or IMDb or whatever, they list it as comedy, fantasy, sci-fi.
Yeah, sci-fi. No bullshit. Yeah, but in that scene, I was expecting the wife to die, Barbara. Because for some reason, I just knew Alec Baldwin was in this. I was like, well, obviously, if Alec Baldwin's in this, he's going to be, you know, starring. I didn't know that.
Gina Davis is also a huge name.
I'm not as familiar
with her. The whole cast was, like, star-studded, man.
Well, yeah, for the 80s, I wasn't alive in that decade. Well, I mean, consistently, too, but, like, you know, like, a lot of these people aren't...
Him and Winona Ryder are the only names that you... easily recognized.
Exactly. Yeah. That's all I knew from this. Okay. Yeah.
They fall into the river. And then it cuts to their house. A fire lights itself in the fireplace. Very considerate of the fireplace, if you ask me. Lighting a fire is probably the worst part about having a fireplace.
Yeah.
Like, that's the hardest.
The old school way. If you get those, like, fire starters, it's so easy. It's easy. But we're cheaters. We do that.
Yeah. Travis tried so hard at one of our older apartments where we actually had a fireplace. He tried so hard a few times to do it the old school way and got so angry and then like rage drove to Kroger and bought some Duraflame.
You know what pisses me off though? Like if there was a small fire to break out in the house and there was like a stack of wood right next by, that shit would catch on fire instantly because you don't want it to happen. But because I actually want this thing to ignite, it doesn't. That's what infuriates me about it.
It's okay. It's okay.
So back to the movie though, this whole segment with them, so they're doing that, they're noticing
they open the door, they're soaking wet.
Yeah, and I originally thought that like they were just handling wrecking their car super well by just walking back, but and apparently they're like teleported back home because he can't remember walking back. He's going to go retrace his steps outside, and then he walks outside, and then he gets transported into some kind of alternate dimension with sand demon worms.
Just sandworms.
I'm going to call them demons too.
Well, they're sandworms though. Hmm. It's their actual title.
And he looks like he's like in the music video for Black Hole Sun with the green screen.
Oh my god. Speaking of music, we didn't touch upon this. So when the movie starts, the Banana Boat song is playing.
Oh, yeah.
And Travis sings along, except Travis goes, Day-lo, Day-lo. And I was like, are you saying Day-lo? And he's like, yeah, that's the song.
It's what happens when it gets nighttime. Day-lo.
But anyway, God, what's her name? Barbara. She reaches out the door and like pulls him back in. And he's like, man, you don't want to go back out there. And she's like, you've been gone for hours. Like,
yeah, 2 hours. Like, yeah. And this whole scene was so disorienting for me. I was kind of lost because it felt like everything was moving way too fast. I would maybe like ease through some of this a little bit, but it really like, it's baptism by fire in this movie to establish that they died right there. It's kind of nice.
I like it though.
I mean, it's cool if it's intended to disorient you, which maybe that's the intention.
Well, I think it makes sense because they're very disoriented.
That's true.
You know what I mean? It's all very sudden for them as well. So we're very effectively put into their shoes. And I think it makes sense because we cut to them finding the handbook for the recently deceased and they're trying to read it and none of it makes sense. And there's been this whole thing, this like even just these few minutes, but it continues throughout the rest of the movie where Adam will like read something or say something and he mispronounces it or misreads it. So I think it was even funnier when he's like reading through the handbook and he's like, struggling with different things, not in like an illiterate way, but just like it's a little tongue-in-cheek that he like mispronounces things.
Yeah.
Which is completely fine because languages are stupid.
That's true.
Plus, it gives us this great gag for every time people try and say Beetlejuice.
It's spelled so weird, though.
Well, that's the it's a space thing, Beetlejuice.
Space thing.
Yeah.
Is that where the sci-fi comes from?
I don't fucking know. Hold on, I want to make sure I use the right term.
Okay. Because the title of the movie is spelled out differently too.
No, Beetlejuice is a star.
Oh, it's a star.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why people are confused with it being sci-fi. Like, oh, Beetlejuice, obviously, it's about the star.
Yeah, it's in the Orion constellation.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, that's the... So Orion's belt is where you've got, like, the three little dots, and then you've got...
I'm not super well informed on astrology.
It's okay. Constellations are... Well, it's not astrology, first of all, but...
What is it?
Constellations are fucking stupid because it's just, like... You know, like when you go outside and you look at clouds and you're like, hey, that cloud looks like a rabbit having a tea party. And
yeah, I
like,
know. It's about the stars making shapes like the Big Dipper and all that. Yeah.
No, astrology is stuff like Capricorn. Here's your...
Oh, is that what that is? Yeah, what am I thinking of then?
Astronomy?
Astronomy. That's it. They're too similar.
Yeah, people get mixed up a lot. Yeah. It's fine.
Okay.
Where were we at? Okay, so we cut to some sort of den, cave type area. We see flyers that say Beetlejuice, bioexterminator. We see a newspaper open. The front page reads, Sandrim attacks increase. He checks the obituaries, which is the new arrivals. It's a little... They play a lot with, like, death jokes in this movie.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
So he's checking the obituaries because he says he needs a new job. And he says, hello, Maitlands. I don't know. Is that how it's pronounced?
I think so. I feel
like that's the only time we heard it. And I was like writing furiously.
Yeah, I think you got it.
Okay. There we cut back to Barbara and Adam. And they're trying to figure out what the deal is. And they're like, are we in some sort of purgatory? And he's like, maybe we're in heaven. We like our house. And she's like, we can't be in heaven. There's too much dust. Which, yes.
Yeah, I thought of you when she said
nice.
That.
So they go to the window. They hear a car. They see that it's Jane. She's outside. They're trying to shout to her, but she can't see them. This is where she's putting up this old sign. Like, it looks like she's coming straight from the funeral to put that sign up. Because, wow, that's cold.
Yeah, and she's dressed in funeral attire.
Same with her daughter. Yeah, I feel like... There has to be more to it legally than her to just be able to sell it. But whatever, this isn't a real estate movie. It kind of is a real estate movie, though, in a way.
Yeah, it's kind of plays a pretty huge role in the whole thing. But, I mean, unless they didn't have anybody that could, like, maybe she is family. Maybe that's why she had the rights to it. You know, maybe she was the next in line. So, I don't know.
I don't know. But they're trying to shout to her. She can't hear or see them. Rule number two is that the living won't usually see the dead. So it's won't. Doesn't mean that, like, they can't. It just takes a different kind of person to do that, which we get to later when we meet Lydia. Mm-hmm. So the new family starts to move in. It's the Dietzes. We've got Delia, Charles, and Lydia. Delia's earrings are... I love the fashion of both Delia and Lydia. If you combine those two characters, that's my aesthetic. 100%.
Yeah, because Lydia's... I feel like that's Tim Burton injecting a lot of Tim Burton into a character. Yes. Because she's just dressed as a gothic character the entire time. It's all black. She's got, like, the head dresses or whatever. I don't know, like...
It's her hair.
She's got, like,
It's her bangs.
No, does she not, like, wear, like,
the
hats?
Oh, yeah, she has, like, a veil.
Yeah, she, like, wears veils and all that stuff. It makes me think of the character from... That... Aubrey Plaza does in Parks and Rec. April, her character that she does when she's in the costume.
Oh, Janet Snakehall?
That's it. Yes. She dresses a lot like that, except more gothy.
So, yeah. Otho is also here. He is an interior designer, I guess. They don't fully establish what his profession is. I think his profession is to be up Delia's butt.
It's that, and he's just kind of there, like, if the plot needs this type of person, he's got that background because he's also versed in paranormal shit too, apparently.
Yeah, he says he knows that. He studied hair, so he knows a bunch about chemicals, which actually, like, if you do, like, proper cosmetology school, you do have to learn a lot of
there's
like,
a lot of stuff that goes chemistry. Into that. Yeah, it's insane. I know that much, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's there to redecorate, and my God, they have a lot of strong ideas about it. Charles is miserable because he doesn't want her to redo the entire house, which when I see the final product, I get it. I get why, because it's not good. No. They're like looking around. they're trying to scare them so that way they'll leave because they don't like they can't leave the house. Barbara and Adam can't. And they already immediately hate these people. So they don't want to be stuck living with them. So they're trying to do things to scare them off. And we keep getting these like not quite jumps like these fake outs. So, like, Barbara hangs herself in the closet, rips off her face, and it shows Delia and Otho screaming, but it's because they hated, like, the stuff that was still in the closet.
Yeah, the wardrobe. Yeah. Yeah. These scenes, that scene right there where she pulls her face
off. Oh, my God.
It was really well done. Yeah. I was impressed.
Yeah, the special effects got, like, awards for this movie. Oh, it did? Yeah.
Good, it should have. Yeah, they did a great job with this. And then the next scene, they go over into the other room, and Alec Baldwin's character, Adam... what does he do? He's like holding his own head, right?
Barbara's holding his head, I think.
That's right. Yeah. So he's a headless body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, they're screaming. This is the one room that Charles asks Delia not to touch. I guess he likes the office. He likes that aesthetic better than hers.
Yeah.
Which I have to say, hard agree, but I'm a big lover of tacky wallpapers. So take that as you will. They hear them going upstairs to the attic and rush past them and lock the door shut. And Otho and Delia, for some reason, don't, like, they feel them rushing past them, but they don't really question why the door slams shut in front of their faces, which I think just kind of shows. Like, I know part of it is that it's supposed to be, like, you know, people generally will just try and explain away the unexplainable, you know? But I think with these two characters, it's really more about being so self-absorbed that they're not aware of their surroundings.
That's how I took it, too.
Barbara asks, what's the good of being a ghost if you can't scare people? Which, I get it. I'd be pissed, too. Like, I can't even be a spooky ghost. I can't even chill with people. She ends up stepping outside and sees a sandworm. The dinner table that night, the Dietzes are, like, all bickering with each other. They're very much an unhappy family. It's very clear. But I talked about that already at the beginning.
Yeah.
So the movers are terrible. They're just, like, they suck at moving everything. They're, like, destroying shit. They're tossing around Delia's art, which, yeah, her art's not great, but still, like, it's not what you're paid to do. They run furniture into the stair banister, like, it's just all
they have it in the crane too, and it's slamming up against the house and pins her too.
Yeah, it's just all it's all bad. Up in the attic, Barbara and Adam found Beetlejuice's ad. He managed to sneak it somewhere for them. While they're looking out the window, Lydia's outside and she sees them up in the window. She's very curious and she wants to go investigate. That's when Jane drives up. And she's like, hey, what happened to the people that lived here? And Jane's sitting in the back seat says, they died! In the way only a child that age can be so, like, brunt about things. Blunt.
Brunt.
Whatever. Oh, my God. So she's dropping off a skeleton key, which will open any room in the house, which is the only way to be able to get into the attic. So Lydia goes upstairs. She tries to get into the attic, and Barbara and Adam are kind of, like, barricading the whole thing. The TV comes on, and, like, an actual commercial for Beetlejuice starts playing. And he's, like, he's in the miniature, or the model village, or whatever. So, like, he's on, like, this plastic cow. And the grass is all, like, tiny little rubber points, things like that. And it's just, like, it's a whole weird commercial. It's very, it's just weird. He's very used car salesman-y. Plays right to what they need because they want people out of the house. So that way they can live peacefully. I don't know what their game plan is after that because it's not like Jane's going to leave it unsold, right?
Well, I mean, you know how haunted houses and houses with bad history are hard to sell. Maybe it would be the same with that.
Maybe. But they didn't die in the house.
No, but still, like, I mean, it's haunted. You can say, it's, you know, whatever, it's haunted. There's ghosts there.
Maybe that's not such a turnoff, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, it ends with him, like, singing about chewing or eating the dog or something, right?
Chewing the dog, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just funny because in that moment, like, we laughed really hard and Talia appeared. She'd been back in the bedroom.
Oh, isn't that the same part, too, where we were sitting there talking to Talia, and I was like, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. And as soon as I said the third one, her, like, alarmed petter came on.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a nightly reminder to pet Talia, which is just a running joke. I like to set nonsensical alarms on Travis's phone. But it was just, like, perfect timing. She runs in, Travis does the whole Beetlejuice thing, and on the third Beetlejuice, we go, let's see.
So, all right, I got you here.
Okay.
He found when he was reading the manual that you can draw a door if you ever need assistance. And yeah. So what he does is he grabs chalk, and then there's a brick section up in the attic where he straight up chalk zones that bitch.
Oh!
That's for you, because you made that chalk zone reference a couple episodes ago.
Man, let's see how often we can incorporate chalk zone into our podcast. Yeah,
I'm game for it.
We're going to become a chalk zone podcast.
But yeah, he draws the door, and all of a sudden, the bricks just start to just open up, and then they jump into it, and then they're teleported into some kind of afterlife waiting room.
Yep, that's how you know it's hell.
Is that what it's supposed to be?
I don't know. I just...
See, yeah, I thought it was like more of like a limbo type situation.
I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah. They're greeted by the secretary.
They're greeted... Okay, so they're in the waiting room and they see a bunch of other people that have clearly died. And it's very obvious how these other people died, because they died like they still look like how they did when they died. And it was a very conscientious choice on Tim Burton's part not to have Barbara and Adam like soaked the entire time, because he was like, that's not gonna be fun for anybody while we're filming.
Yeah,
like, so I think that's kind of cool.
I wonder how they I guess you don't necessarily need to explain it. It doesn't need to be outright said like that.
But yeah, the secretary is like kind of brushing them off a little bit. She says that their contract is they have to stay in the house for 125 years. They only get 3 vouchers to talk to Juno, their caseworker. So it, you know, kind of use wisely is the subtext with that.
Is it established what happens after that time? Do they then pass on to heaven?
I don't know. I just, like, they're bound to the house for that amount of time.
Okay.
Is all that we really know for sure.
Okay, yeah, it doesn't say.
Yeah. Let's see. They finally get called back. They don't have their handbook. They're just fucking up all over the place. They're really bad at being dead. Everybody's like, haven't you read through the handbook? They're like, we don't get it. It's like they're the first people that struggled this much with it.
Yeah,
the
right.
The way everybody's reacting, which shouldn't be anything, because later we see a football team that is struggling to even understand that they're dead. So.
Well, that's kind of normal when you first die, apparently, because that's what happened with Adam and Barbara.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, everybody's acting like they're so, so inept. And it's just like, well,
I would be
everybody's
too.
Just struggling, yeah.
You go into death in this universe with no explanation. You don't even know that you die until you figure it out by sandworms. Like, that's...
Instead of the Grim Reaper, a sandworm, like, comes to get you.
I mean, that's what happens. He's like, oh, I've been out there for 2 hours and there was a sandworm. It's a claymated sandworm, too. It looks really cool.
Yes. We've talked about this before.
Claymated. Clay animated.
Claymation.
Claymation. There we go. Oh, fuck me, man.
Speaking of, like, weird timey-wimey stuff, they've been in the waiting room for 3 months. Because when they get called back to meet with Juno, and she, like, meets with them where, like, in their house or whatever, which is so confusing. And they're like, this is our house, but it looks so different. And it's because they'd already finished all of the renovations and decorations, which, man, must be nice to have that kind of money to just throw at a major renovation project to have it done that fast.
Yeah, right.
Jesus. So, yeah, Juno's basically, like, she's there to determine if help is needed, deserved, and available. And basically what she's telling them is, like, if you want the family out, just haunt them, scare them out. Like, she's like, you don't need us for this. And she's, like, keeps directing them to the handbook. And it feels very much like in school where the syllabus for, like, in college where the syllabus for a class has every bit of information that you need in it. And students will just, like, not read the syllabus.
I know that that pisses you off because you get copied on those, or you see them in, like, the forums for the class all the time.
Yeah, I had a group project in my last class of my master's program before my practicum. And one of my group project partners just, like, could not grasp the concept of reading through the syllabus. And I was getting so frustrated. And I kept, like, I eventually at one point just copied and pasted from the syllabus into our group chat. Because they were arguing with me about how a project should be done. And I was like, literally, I'm not going to fail because of you. You are doing it wrong. We need to fix it.
That made me realize how, even though some people are masters, like in the master's program, they can still be fucking dumb.
Yeah. Well, like, and the program required a lot of collaboration, which makes sense based on what the program was. Like, it's a fairly collaborative type of profession. But these are people that definitely, they had to have coasted on group projects.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way. They are so clueless. Or on the in the classes that weren't as group heavy, they probably blew up the professors, like, oh, God, all the time.
Fucking worst.
I just, oh my God. But yeah, so I'm beginning to get that type of energy with Barbara and Adam and everybody else in the afterlife. Yeah. But she was like, there's a chapter on haunting. Use it. And they mentioned that they had this ad for Beetlejuice. And she's like, nope, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. He doesn't work well with others. She won't give more details than that, really. She's just like, just don't do it.
This is when she gives them the backstory of him, right?
No. That's later.
Oh, okay.
When they go back to her after they had tried to work with Beetlejuice.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
We see that when they go back to their attic, they are aware that Beetlejuice is in the model cemetery.
So is that where he resides at all times?
I don't know how he managed to end up in there because that's clearly not where he was before they died.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
There's a lot of things that go unexplained in this movie.
It's one of them. Let's just not look at it too closely.
Yeah, it's very much like that. That's fine. You know,
just enjoy the ride of it.
Yeah, that's fine. But, you know. When doing a podcast, when we're breaking things down, it's hard not to be like, wait, why is he there? Like,
yeah, because, like, when we first see him at the beginning, like, he didn't even know who the Maitlands were, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's in his own home.
Yeah.
So why does he need assistance being called out when he can just teleport himself into these situations?
I don't think he's, like, fully free to roam. He's assuming, like, he's, like, trapped, kind of. And that's why he's saying, like, I need a job. It's because he needs to trick somebody into letting him, like, free.
That makes sense.
Because he's a ghost, too.
Right.
Technically. But he's just, like, he's a rowdy ghost. He's a rowdy boy.
He's a mean boy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So during all of this time, like, Lydia took advantage of them going through the wall to, you know, look around the attic. She sees the model. She's, you know, just kind of curious about all of it. She tries to tell her parents about thinking that it's haunted. And they're just like, her dad is just so quick to brush her off all the time.
To be fair, hearing about ghosts is not exactly something that you would. I know you are a believer in ghosts and stuff like that, but most people would brush that stuff off.
It's not that he's brushing off that there's ghosts. It's that he's brushing her off.
Okay, that's different. Yeah.
Like, he's very disconnected from her. And Delia's her stepmother, too. So they don't get along.
Right.
So, yeah. When when Barbara and Adam come back, they they put sheets on their heads and try and haunt everybody. They're, like, moaning. And Lydia thinks that it's Charles and Delia, which I could get being, like, our child, don't want to hear this. And then she walks out into the hall and sees the like sheets floating. And she was like, this is weird fetish stuff that you really ought to keep to the bedroom. I do not need to see this any more than I need to hear it.
That just makes me think that she's suspecting that they're into like some ghost fetish shit.
Yeah. Like, well, and it's funny because she like takes pictures like rapid fire with her Polaroid camera. And I wonder, like, is she prepared to blackmail them?
Maybe.
Because it's kind of the energy. Like, she's either blackmailing them or she's just trying to shame them into keeping their shit quieter. But when she looks at one of the Polaroids, she realizes that the feet aren't showing up on film.
Yeah, and before that happened too, you could see that the characters were actually like floating across without seeing their feet, which I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. So she can see them. She goes over to them. She was like, oh, are you the people from the attic that used to live here that died? Why do you have sheets on your head? Are you really gross? And she's like that morbid kind of like excited to see gross. And then when they pull the sheets off, she's like, oh, you're just normal. Why? Why are you doing this?
You need the body bags, Lydia. That's where you see the most fucked up stuff.
Exactly. Talk to John Carpenter.
Exactly.
So she like she tells them that she like she picked up the handbook when she was up in the attic and she read through it. And she said that people tend to not want to see the strange and unusual, but she herself is strange and unusual.
In the way
that
the
most edgelord thing ever.
Like in the way that she says it too. It's like, but I am also rather strange and unusual. And she just kind of like looks up to her at the side and she's like, oh, so dramatic.
I cringe so hard listening to her talk because it is so much how I was. Like,
oh, is that you? Yeah. Oh, no. It's okay. I wasn't any better when I was that age.
I'm so glad that that was MySpace era, so I don't have to see all of my, like, dramatic pictures. There were a couple early Facebook where it's like,
Let's do a little bit of digging. You can still pull up MySpace stuff, by the way.
I know. I did it once, like, a really long time ago, mostly to get, like, pictures with my grandpa. But, yeah, it's a... MySpace was a lot rougher than Facebook. Oh, no, I'm just having, like, cringy flashbacks. So, they're, like, basically they're telling her, they're, like, being upfront with her because she can actually see them. Like,
yeah.
She's the first, like, non-ghost that they've talked to.
Which has got to be refreshing.
Yeah. And they're just like, well, we just don't want you all to live here. And Lydia's kind of like, that's legit. I don't want to live with Delia or Charles. Like...
Yeah,
she's like, I'll try and talk to them.
Yeah, and they're like, they're trying to like spook them out of the house, and she's saying that it's definitely not going to happen because the Charles is not going to lose money on a house or anything like that.
Mm-mm.
So they can't really. I mean, they're still going to bank on it, like try and do it, but it kind of like adds a little bit of discouragement to the whole plan.
Yeah, but I kind of like that, like she. It's established early. Like, she doesn't say, like, oh, well, they're never going to believe me. Like, she's just like, cool, I'll tell them, but they probably won't listen because he's spent money on this house or whatever. Like,
yeah, exactly.
We don't have any of the soap opera, like, miscommunication nonsense happening.
Yeah, and that's kind of cool. Yeah, because, yeah. It's not exactly fun to watch.
It's one of those movie tropes where, like, it's like if you would take 10 extra seconds to get out an explanation...
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of drama could be avoided. And it's just kind of lazy screenwriting to just be like, let me explain. Walks away. Like, give it a different reason for why this miscommunication is happening, you know?
Right.
Or even just make it like, I don't know, there's different ways to do it other than just like, I'm going to walk away and you have time to shout out the explanation really quick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody knows the trope. I don't have to explain it. We all get it. We've been there. We've yelled at the TV before. But yeah, so they go inside and they realize that they're not going to be able to scare anybody. So they call Beetlejuice out, except they're not really calling him out right away. They get pulled in to the model and they have to dig him out of his own grave, which we've already established. We don't really know how he got there.
And this is kind of contradicting to what happens later too, right? Because saying his name three times should bring him out, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. Like, it sets him free or whatever, but I think they had to, like, make their contract
make the deal with them. Okay.
Yeah. I wonder how much of this is, like, part of the rules he has to go by and how much of it is his own flair for the dramatic.
It could be that, but I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, he makes a point later to say, like, he's like, hey, man, I don't make up the rules. Like, kind of a little bit tongue-in-cheek, fourth wall-breaking about how some of this is just silly and nonsensical.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think that's part of also what happens when you, like, switch screenplay writers partway through.
That could be it.
There's, like, little issues that are a little bit harder to iron out.
Yeah.
So they dig him out. He floats at them. He immediately kisses Barbara. He's, like, way sexually aggressive.
Peeking under her skirt. Yeah,
he's gross. Yeah. He is very gross. He's very abrasive. He is that guy. I was talking about this yesterday. We went to a UK football game a couple weeks back, and we didn't tailgate beforehand, so we're there and we're sober because UK does not serve alcohol at their sporting events. But plenty of people had tailgated beforehand. Lots of people had tailgated. And we're in line for a drink, and there's a dude behind us, and he is so drunk and so obnoxious.
Oh my God.
And he's going on, like, he's talking way too fast, talking way too loud. He is, like, puffing himself up, like, so overinflated ego. And that's Beetlejuice in this moment, you know? He is that obnoxious drunk guy when you're sober and just, like, sir, this is a Wendy's. You know what I mean? Like,
at least Beetlejuice is fun to watch, though. Yes. This guy was not fun to watch.
Yes. I think anybody other than Michael Keaton, I don't know if anybody could have played it with quite the same charisma.
Yeah. It's hard to picture anybody else. Because, yeah, I love the way he delivers everything and how he's just kind of, like, moves around the screen. He's just animated. Like, the way he walks. Like,
yeah, and he, like, because he's really trying to sell, because they're unsure of hiring him, and they're like, well, what are your qualifications? And he, like, starts off like he's in an interview. He has a very proper voice. He's like, oh, well, I went to Juilliard and then Harvard Business School, and then, and, like, he, like, slowly devolves back into his normal voice, and he's like, and I'm dead. Yeah. Like, and he, like, he switches around between being, like, scary and threatening and then, like, overly friendly, and then, like, at one point he mimics Adam's outfits and he's like, I hate sandworms. You hate sandworms. We're all friends here. We're just wearing a couple flannel shirts.
Like, yeah, I think we shop at the same store.
Yeah, like, he goes back and forth, and he does all of this so seamlessly, and, like, you can almost feel, like, how exhausting that conversation would actually be.
Yeah.
And it's so well done. But they, basically what they say that, They want the family out of the house. Like, he's, like, trying to, like, list all of his different services because he can do a lot of really, like, fucked up things. But they're just like, no, we just want them to, like, be scared enough to move out. And as they walk away, he said, this is the moment that got to you. He says, nice fucking model.
Yeah.
And this is a PG movie. And this was before, like, a change in terms of language and MPAA ratings and stuff, which is also very frustrating because, as you all know, we are covering Friday the 13th, and Friday the 13th is consistently getting torn to shreds by
right
the ratings
board. Time too.
Yes.
Like, when we were like, Jason Takes Manhattan, I think, was when it was, like, peak MPA, or either that or Part 7, which is in this era of, like, the late 80s. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, those movies get torn to shreds. That's biased, though, because people, they would see the Friday the 13th title and be like, fuck it, we're not doing anything. But, yeah, I mean, this right here, whatever. It's fun. Like, there's a lot of cursing and a lot of dark themes in this, but I appreciate it.
But I was reading online that this is one of those movies that was, like, still in that era where there are a couple of PG movies that throw down an F-bomb, including most notably Spaceballs, Big, and Caddyshack 2.
This is, I remember whenever I told you and Caleb and Kimmy about this when we were at dinner, about how Tobe Hooper tried to get Texas Chainsaw Massacre a PG rating. it makes sense whenever you see things like this, because back then they were way more lax with giving PG ratings.
Yeah.
There's no visible gore or kill. Well, there's a little bit of gore in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but there's like
Texas something outright. Texas Chainsaw Massacre like almost gaslights you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I can be watching the movie and I feel like I'm seeing gore. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
it's amazing at it. But yeah, he like specifically edited a lot of that stuff out to try and get a PG rating, and it didn't happen. So yeah, that's just how it was back in the day.
We cut to a dinner party. It's a fancy dinner party with Art World folks and Lydia, which is not me saying that. That is how Delia described it to Lydia herself. And they're like making various jokes and talks about the paranormal and the afterlife and ghosts and all of that come up, and they're all like kind of brushing it off, and Lydia's like, no, it's real. And Otho's like, you know, if you commit suicide, you spend the afterlife as a civil servant, which is like a little wink and a nod to Miss Argentina, who was the receptionist in the afterlife.
She showed her wrists, which had very clear cuts on them.
Yeah. And she'd even made a note, like, which I thought this was kind of, because they don't, this movie like mention suicide a whole lot without like a lot of heavy unpacking of it, but like I thought it was kind of nice when she did that, and she was like, you know, if I'd known this is how I was going to spend the rest of the afterlife, I might have tried to avoid my little accident. Yeah. Which I think is kind of nice, because you know there are so many stories of people that who don't where their suicide is not completed,
yeah, and they regret the action. Yeah, yeah.
And there are like stories, like I've heard stories online of like EMTs that and 911 operators and stuff, that when they respond to those phone calls or those scenes, they can like they hear the distress in somebody's voice when they call it in, or like they'll see people like crawling towards, you know, an area to try and get help. So it you know, like I said, this movie has a lot of heavy themes and doesn't dwell on them a whole lot, but that's kind of one of those moments where like heavy theme, very real statistic kind of going along with it, not a lot of time dwelt on it.
Right. Thankfully, this is followed by a very silly scene.
Yes, and apparently it was a scene that Tim Burton himself was not very sure of. Like, really? He was like, this is stupid. And but it's one of the most loved scenes in this movie. It is great, because Delia's talking, and then all of a sudden she just starts singing Travis's favorite song.
Delo.
And they all start like dancing, and there's music, and they're like little drums and all of that. And
it's, my like, favorite part was when what's his name, Otho. He like grabs the drums and he's just like banging on them. He's just like really confused. I loved his face during that scene.
It's a really fun scene, and then it ends with everybody's dishes open up and shrimp hands grab their faces. Which is like, it sounds so stupid, and it really like objectively is, but it's also really frightening to think about.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
like if I was grabbed, like
grabbed by a shrimp hand.
Yeah, not like the hands of a shrimp, but it's a
some tiny hands. Just like little baby hands just reach up from the table and grab your face.
No, yeah, it's like, it looks like a hand, but like the fingers are shrampies.
Yeah. But they loved it.
They loved it. They all thought it was great entertainment. And they're like, oh man, capitalism. What can we do to make money from this?
Yeah, immediately ruin it.
Immediately ruin it. And then Lydia's like, hey, so I don't think Barbara and Adam really want to spend their afterlives being an amusement attraction. And they're like, nonsense, you're friends with them, go talk to them. And she's like, so she goes upstairs to talk to them. They're very disappointed that they weren't scared enough.
So I was very confused by this, by the way, because you explained to me that this was a possession. They have the ability to possess the people, too. But, like, I thought that this was Beetlejuice whenever it first started happening, because I was like, there's no way that they could be grabbing all of these people at once and making them move along. That's what I thought was happening at first. I thought that they were, like, grabbing them physically and making them dance like that.
No, I think it was Beetlejuice was, like, possessing them.
That was Beetlejuice?
I think so.
But they was make it? No, because she goes up there and I think Lydia comes back down and is talking about how, like, that was supposed to be a possession. They're kind of frustrated that it didn't scare you. I'm pretty sure she says something along those lines. It was a possession that they tried to do. Like, I thought that they did that. Because they they haven't summoned Beetlejuice yet, so he's not going to be able to do anything.
Okay, I did not take very good notes, and it's been so many years since I watched this that I do not remember off the top of my head.
Okay. So. Because, they listened to that song earlier in the movie. So
That's true. Apparently it was also originally supposed to be a different song, and Catherine O'Hara and I don't know who the other actor was, but they were like, what if we did Calypso instead?
Is that the person, the person that does the singing?
Yeah, Delia. Catherine O'Hara plays Delia. Yeah, so like when Lydia comes down, she's like, they don't want to do this. They don't want to come down and talk to you all. The art people call Delia a flake.
Yeah, they're so harsh with her too.
They really are. So when they won't come down, Charles and Delia and Otho decide they're going to try and go upstairs and convince them. And this is when Beetlejuice comes out as a snake. So originally, this was shot before Michael Keaton was even cast. So they didn't have the whole conception of what Beetlejuice was going to look like yet.
They already shot this before they even cast him? That's insane.
So they had shot it with an animatronic snake. But then when they cast Michael Keaton and like the whole Beetlejuice look was conceptualized, they realized that the snake wasn't going to obviously enough look like Beetlejuice. So they reshot it with that claymation snake that we get. Yeah.
They should have known better, right?
Yeah, that feels like a waste of Bughead.
Yeah, big time.
But yeah, so the snake, like, is distressing everybody, including Barbara and Adam. It throws Charles from the balcony, which, like, Lydia's obviously not the biggest fan of her family, but she also doesn't want her dad to die, you know? She's like, upset and crying. And this hurts Barbara and Adam because they've really started to like grow a liking to Lydia, and they tell Beetlejuice that the deal's off. They don't want any of this because they don't want to kill them. They just want them scared out of the house, and they say his name 3 times and like shoot him back into the bottle. So he's angry, which I think it's kind of interesting that it works both ways. It's like, I kind of like that angle on it, because I feel like in a lot of movies it would be like, once he's out, he's out. Oh, what's the big mystery is how to get him back in again. But that's not the mystery at all. That's not where the tension of this comes from. And I think that's really nice.
Yeah, but yeah, it sucks for him. And the scene that follows that, when he's back in the model and they're talking to him, and you know, they tell him the whole situation about how they don't want them to be killed, he kind of manifests the strip club. And Barbara thinks that Adam made like the strip joint in their model village. But the way that he like dances into there, like he's just kind of, he's not even walking. He's just kind of like side jumping like all the way in there. It's great. That was my favorite shot of the entire movie, just watching him like go into the strip club.
So then Juno gets really mad. Juno's mad at them because they broke so many rules by like letting this many people know that ghosts are real, because apparently that, I guess the issue of like making haunted house attractions is something that the afterlife is very much not a fan of, and they would know that if they would read the goddamn handbook. And she's like, she's lecturing them at the same time that she's got this football team like very confused around her, and she's trying to explain that they are dead.
Yeah, they think that she's the coach.
Yeah, and they keep calling her coach, and she's like, no, the coach survived. I don't know why, but I love these football players. They come back at the very end of the movie too. I don't, there's something about them. They're like lost little puppies. Yeah. It's like a group of dead himbos.
They're in the house in the end.
They are. I know.
They're a family too. They're like, fuck it. We don't understand the afterlife either, guys. Can we just team up with you all?
They're the only other people that seem confused by this. I can get why they would be like, hey, can we hang out with you? And Juno could be like, yeah, let's keep all of my clueless cases together.
Yeah,
that saves her a lot of work.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she she demands that they get the Dietzes out. She like makes them practice their scary faces, because she's like I need to know that you can do this. She's like, look at me, you've got to get them out, you've got to fix this. And then she tells them the backstory about Beetlejuice. Like, he used to work with her, but like he's very violent and doesn't follow the rules. And so he ended up getting banished, basically.
Went to a miniature village.
Yep. So...
By the way, so they're making their faces, and you talked about it earlier. So they actually have, like, scary faces now, very Tim Burton-esque.
Yeah.
But Adams kind of reminds me of, like, Spy versus Spy.
It does.
Yeah, it was weird. He's just got, like, the long nose and then, like, the big oval eyes.
Yeah. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So Lydia is writing a suicide note. It's Heathers. Sad. Very Heathers. Charles, Delia, and Otho are planning a visit from Maxie Dean to try and, like, turn the whole town into an amusement park, basically, because they found the model upstairs while Barbara and Adam were being scolded by Juno.
Oh, and also Otho, right? That's his name.
Mm-hmm.
He took the book while they were breaking into the attic.
Yeah.
Whenever, yeah, so that's important because that comes into play here very shortly.
Yeah. So they've seen the model. Otho's taken the book. Lydia goes upstairs and Beetlejuice, like, starts talking to her and is like, let me out. Let me out. And she's like, how do I do that? And he's like, I can help your friends. And she's like, how do I let you out? And he's like, you have to say my name 3 times. And she's like, okay, what's your name? And he's like, I can't tell you that. And I feel like he's lying about what the rule is. This is where he says, like, I don't make the rules. I think the rule is that he can't say it because then maybe he could let himself in and out.
Maybe, yeah. That would make sense.
Yeah, but, like, he tries to say that, like, if I could say my name out loud, everybody would hear it. Everybody would be summoning me all the time. Yeah. Like, I just want to relax and live my life. So he starts doing charades with her, except he's like, he's a cheater. He cheats. That's not how you play charades.
Yeah, he, like, summons an actual beetle.
I did like the beetle. I don't know why. I don't like bugs at all, but something about the beetle was just like...
It's funny.
Yeah.
She's like, that guy right there. And then she's like, hey.
It had, like, a very, like a good place energy. Like, I could imagine a talking cockroach like that in the good place.
I could see it, yeah.
Where he just casually be like, what's up?
Yeah, I could see it.
Then he, like, has orange juice, like, being poured into a glass. And in the classic way that you play charades, she's, like, getting so close to saying juice, but she's saying everything. She's like, pouring, orange, breakfast, drink. But she doesn't want, she's not quite ready to call him out yet.
Yeah, she figures it out.
She figures out his name, but she's, like, not ready to call him out yet.
She wants to talk to Adam and Barbara about it first.
Yeah. And, Barbara and Adam, they're getting ready to walk back into their basement, or their basement, their attic. That's literally the exact opposite. But Barbara's like, I don't want to scare them out. She's like, I want Lydia to be there with us. Like, they've grown really attached. Like I said, it's a whole chosen family thing. Like,
yeah, and
she's
obviously
the daughter they never had.
Exactly. They wanted a kid, and then they've kind of built that relationship with her.
Yeah. And when they come back in, they see Lydia. They talk her out of her death because she's saying that she... Oh, that's why she was talking to Beetlejuice.
Yeah, because she was like, saying, I want to be in
like
there.
Yeah. That's what it was. Okay. My notes were not good last night.
Well, she went up there to investigate, but she's like, yeah. I need to get out there. And she's like, well, I want to be in there. And he's like, the only way I can get you in here is if I'm out there.
Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, they talk her out of it. And, like, they're very, like... No, we're here. We're your support system. Like, we don't have to be on the same planes of existence. It's fine. That's supportive.
Yeah,
that's nice. That's unconditional love. So the other living people, the bad living people, come up and take the model away. I'm sick of saying their names. Their names are such fucking mouthfuls.
Yeah.
Delia and Otho. Oh, my God. They're taking the model downstairs, that way they can show Maxie Dean, like, what the town looks like, and they can plan their amusement park. There's a really funny throwaway line about a talking statue of Marcel Marceau, because he's, like, very famously a mime.
Yeah, so I remember you laughing about that, but I didn't get it.
I literally only know that because it was a joke in an episode of Friends, and I had to look that up.
Okay.
So, thanks, Friends. So they ask Lydia about Barbara and Adam, and she is like, they left. They'll invite the Dietzes to stay if they promise not to tease them or make them do tricks. And Oath is like, oh, I think the fuck not. I'm going to summon them anyway and make them do what we want them to do. And she's like, well, good luck because there are no personal items left. And then Delia's like, actually, I kept their wedding dress and suit, which it's weird that she threw everything else out, but kept that.
I could see it being like an art piece.
Yeah, maybe thing. That's where she was going with it. Like, I clearly we've got stuff from the former residents. That's in true. This house. We do. But like, she trashed everything else, got rid of everything else. It's just weird that she like hung on to the clothing.
Yeah.
But it does make for probably, I'm going to say this is the scariest scene of the movie for me. Mm-hmm. Just like existentially, it's terrifying. Because Otho starts doing this chant that like brings them, like makes them corporeal again. And they are like decomposing when they come back.
Yeah, it's really weird. Because they're like aging ultra fast. So Barbara's the first one summoned, and she's just already like kind of like.
She looks like beef jerky.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what it would. I don't even know what to compare it to. But then Adam's bride. They're both kind of decomposing there. Otho doesn't know what the fuck is happening. He just thought that this would summon them, and he doesn't know how to reverse it.
Yeah, and so then Lydia's like, well, cool, guess I have to bring Beetlejuice out now. And he's like, for a favor this big, I want to be set free permanently, and I can only do that if I'm married. Now, he has made some creepy predatorial comments about Lydia up until this point. We know that he's a liar. We know that he's a cheater. It's possible that this isn't the rule that keeps him out permanently. This is him being creepy.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, yeah. Like, what is, does
like,
he even...
And here's the thing. Like, in the original script, because I said it was dark, mm-hmm. right? In the original script, he rapes Lydia.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So...
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Why
yeah,
would
yeah,
you
yeah.
do that? Why is that even necessary?
So, yeah. So, I'm glad that they went a complete... This movie would not be the same without it having the sense of humor. It would just be bleak and unpleasant to watch.
It would be interesting to see that vision, but I'm glad we got the version that we did.
Yeah. There's plenty of bleak, violent horror movies out there. It's horror comedy done well is such a delight and a treat is what I was trying to say. So I'm glad we got the version of this that we did.
I'm glad we got, you made it shorter that way we got to the point and save time, but then you had to explain the whole thing.
delete. So she agrees that she'll marry him. He comes back and like he gets some of the art people out right away. Let's see. I'm trying to figure out if I wrote down all of them. He knocks them out, basically. He like comes out as like a carnival. Like he is a carnival.
Yeah, because
The strong man hammer thing.
Yeah, that's right. Like, he knocks him through the roof out. Yeah, that's right.
And then.
I like how we both stuck our hands up to the ceiling.
He won't let Otho leave. He tears his suit off. He had another suit underneath it.
Which apparently frightens and is traumatic to him. Because he just runs off after that. He didn't like it.
He gets him and Lydia into wedding clothing. She's in a red dress. There are statues that come alive that grab Delia and Charles to make them witnesses to the ceremony, and they're like trying to rush through this wedding ceremony so that way whatever his plan is to get her married will happen before the Maitlands finish undecomposing,
which is because like confusing.
Like it cuts back and forth, so it seems like when Beetle just comes out, like they start recomposing, I guess will be the word I will use. Yeah, because they like in the background, you don't see, like, they don't explicitly show it, but you see like their faces become less shrunken as the scene goes on.
Ah, I didn't catch that. I was just confused whenever Adam comes back over there and he's starting to shout Beetlejuice, but then
yeah,
he kind of teleports him away or something.
Yeah, yeah. So what's happening is that the Maitlands, once they're strong enough to like start moving forward, they're trying to call Beetlejuice back into the model. And he's stopping them. And he sends Adam to the model and he like zips up Barbara's mouth and then he puts steel over top of it. So she goes outside and gets a sandworm and makes it come in and eat him.
Yeah.
And
and also during that whole segment, Adam is in the miniature world and he drives a miniature truck and it actually is a miniature. Yeah.
That was so nice because in a lot of movies they like they will use miniatures to do like a big explosion effect or something like that. Like think about Cabin in the Woods. That's how they do that, like hand smashing the cabin at the end. Yeah. It's easier to do that with it's easier and cheaper to build a miniature model and film something like that than it is to like build a giant practical set and destroy it.
Exactly.
But it was so nice to see this miniature thing done in a way that it's like literally meant to be a miniature.
Yeah. And it was funny. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so Beetlejuice gets eight and they're all happy. We see Lydia leave school and she comes back in and the house is decorated back to how it was before. And Barbara and Adam are asking how she did on her science test, and she did really well, and she seems so much happier, more engaged in everything. They're very happy, and because she did well, they're like, okay, we can do it, and then they start playing, oh my god.
The banana song.
No, it's not the banana boat song, it's something else. It's Harry Belafonte, it's a shake.
Oh, yeah.
But they start playing that. She's like floating and dancing. The football team is dancing back up.
Because they live in this house too, apparently now.
In the house too. We see Charles and Delia are upstairs and they were, you know, they're like, oh, guess Lydia did well on her test, which, God, thank God she's got ghost mom and dad.
Yeah, I was thinking about that dynamic because they're like, fuck, like, we finally don't have to raise a kid anymore. And those two are like, fuck, we finally have a kid to raise now. And she's like, yeah, I finally have parents that give a shit about me. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's it. She floats and dances, and that's the end of it.
Yeah. Beetlejuice gets his head shrunk in the waiting room.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Because, yeah, he's like, oh, did you do that to that guy? Because it's the guy with the shrunken head from the beginning. And he tries to steal his ticket in line, and then he just sprinkles powder on him, shrinks his head.
Yep. All right. What do you think after talking about it?
I still like it a lot. There's a lot of plot issues with it when you get down trying to think about explanations for things, but I'm not going to let that affect me because it's a horror comedy. It's not meant to be taken seriously.
I also think of it like it's Tim Burton, and I feel like even live action Tim Burton is cartoony to me.
Oh, yeah. So. I mean, that's his whole thing. Like, he's super cartoony with everything that he does, which is like part of the charm of a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What about you?
What's your score?
Oh, yeah, my score. I'm going to keep it at an 8.
I'm going to bump mine up to an 8.5.
Okay.
Just because I love this movie, and talking about it is just, it's so fun. It's truly a delight, and especially knowing, like, what it went through to get to it is, you know, it's nice that we got the product that we did. I think, so we already talked about Talia coming out and getting her own Beetlejuice moment. That was the point where she stayed out with us for the rest of the movie. She was asleep in the bedroom beforehand, so I think Talia got sucked in. So I think she might give it a 7
because
she
missed the beginning. Yeah.
But she was really into it afterwards.
All right, and I've got our listener submitted reviews here.
Okay.
So.
Oh wait! Can I do one more thing real quick?
Sure.
So there was a script written for a sequel.
I was wondering why this
never made it to production. But it's called Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian, and it sees the Dietzes moving to Hawaii, and they're going to be living in a renovated condominium resort that's being built, but they found out that it's built on a burial ground. So
So the original two are not part of it, so they just move into another haunted area.
I am not sure. That was a very brief entry on the Beetlejuice wiki.
I would think so. that unless, you know, they break the rules that they established in this, that's the only way that they can get those two, because they're like locked in at the house.
Yeah.
So, I'm kind of glad that this is like a standalone thing. I mean, there's the cartoon, obviously. I don't know what that's like. I never watched it, but you know, this feels more like it needs to be just like a one-time thing. Because,
well, and it's one of those, I was talking about this with your mom earlier, actually, because we were talking about like classic horror movies, and she's like, yeah, you don't see very many well-known monsters these days. And I was like, well, I feel like horror these days, it's a lot less serialized than some of those more classic ones. So you've got a lot of standalone movies that produced really great scary characters, or movies that are like part of like two or three. They're not big serialized. And this is one of those that it is standalone and produced, you know, because it's withstood the test of time, produced a really well-known character.
Yeah, yeah. Beetlejuice is discussed so much even today. Yeah. Okay. So this is, we got two reviews here. The first one is from our friend Taylor.
Okay. Hi, Taylor.
All right. So his review is a classic, funny, iconic, and enough creepy without being too campy, which I agree with.
Yeah.
But, you know, even if it was like more, I mean, there's camp in there, but it's, it's a good amount.
It's blended so well with the creepiness.
Yeah. It's a good combination. So it's perfect for both. Second one is from Halloween 24/7. Mm-hmm. And they said, one of the best horror comedies out there. Michael Keaton steals the show.
He really does. He, like I said at the beginning, he's only on screen for 14 and a half minutes, and the movie is named after him, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing that I was kind of confused about, because I thought, my imagination of what this movie was is that these people go to like a cemetery and summon him, and he has like a whole cast along with him. So he had like a bunch of other characters that, you know, are kind of companions with him. And I didn't know what the objective was, but, you know, I didn't expect him to like just not really be there for most of the movie. But I mean, yeah, that's my favorite part of the entire thing. I'm sure that's everybody's favorite part.
There was actually a third review that I think you forgot about.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I've
yes.
got it. I've got it
okay,
pulled up.
Yeah.
This is from our friend Kelsey. Hey, Kelsey. Looking for the ghost with the most? It's showtime. It's strange and unusual. Guaranteed to make your millennium. I'll say it once. I'll say it three times. I love it.
That's a really good review.
It is. Good copy, Kelsey.
Yeah, for real.
But yeah, no, it's like, it's a classic for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see us watching this more. I'm actually, after thinking about it, I'm definitely going to get the 4K for this.
Yes!
Yeah, that's going to come out.
Yeah, so much like Freddy's Dead, we only received negative reviews when we asked for reviews. Yeah, and then, okay, I have a bone to pick with every single one of you. Everybody told us Freddy's Dead is terrible. And then on both of our polls online, everybody was like, yeah, no, this is a great movie. We love it. We want to watch it all the time.
Like, everywhere else that like I was talking about the episode, they're like, I don't know. I wouldn't say Freddy's Dead's the least favorite one in the franchise from fans. I'm like, that's all we were told the entire time we even like were leading up to it. Anything about Nightmare on Elm Street was like, well, at least it's not Freddy's Dead. And I was like, well, fuck, I guess everybody hates that movie, but apparently not.
But yeah, so this is one that we only received positive reviews about it. Hold on, pause real quick.
Okay, so I've got the record and the polls from both Twitter and Instagram. So I'll start with Twitter.
This is for Freddy's Dead?
Yeah, this is Freddy's Dead.
Okay.
On Twitter, I basically just put, actually it's on both Twitter and Instagram. The question was, or the two things you could choose are Freddy's Dead is neat or Freddy's Dead is ass. 86% said Freddy's Dead is neat. And 14% says it's ass. So
bait and switch. Bait and
I
switch.
I know. And then on Instagram, we had 63% people said that Freddy's Dead is neat. And 37% said it's not neat. So, yeah, you guys it's our least favorite so far.
Yeah.
So there's
Well, I've seen New Nightmare and Freddy versus Jason, so I
there's also the remake though. You haven't seen the remake.
I have seen the remake, but it's been a while, so
okay. Well, a lot of people hate that one too. Yeah. So okay, so go ahead.
Okay, so I pulled up a bad review off IMDb just so that way we can get a little bit more of a balanced view, because that's kind of the whole point of the podcast, is we can, you know, see different perspectives on what people do and don't like about a movie.
Okay.
And since we both ended up loving it, which we never know what's going to happen when it's one that we haven't both seen. So it just is what it is.
Yeah.
So I pulled this one up. The concept is quite original and could have been interesting if done well, but it wasn't. The story went nowhere, even though they could have done some interesting stuff with it. As it is, the film degenerated, as Robert Ebert pointed out in his view, into a series. The film degenerated, as Roger Ebert pointed out in his review, into a series of gimmicks. It was supposed to be funny, but I laughed maybe once or twice. Actually, it was more like a chuckle.
Hey.
Most of the time, I was in agony and bored out of my mind. Travis, rebuttal. I didn't read that part when I picked the review.
Look, man, you don't. I can appreciate a comedy and not laugh out loud. You know, like I can find things humorous without it causing me to actually burst out laughing. I actually did chuckle.
Travis is a stoic.
I am, but I go like if something funny happens, I'll laugh. And you know, the scene where he like dances into the strip club is my favorite part, and I remember getting the hardest laugh out of that part. I'm doing like the little dance like with us. But yeah, I mean, I thought that there was enough story. Like, it's not a deep story, but I don't think it really needed to be. And I don't know.
It took turns that weren't expected, which I appreciate. I think if it had been too by the numbers, it would have lost a lot of its charm.
That's true. I agree with that. So.
Okay. So if there was one change you could make to the movie, what would it be? That would improve your rating of it.
Well, I would put more Beetlejuice in there, I guess. Maybe like that's the magic formula, so like have him in there not so much because he is such an abrasive character.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He's so fun to watch. I was expecting more of him.
Okay.
So, you know, I think I probably would have enjoyed it more if he was in it too.
Okay. Dream sequel.
I already told you. I mean, I already said I don't want there to be a sequel to this, but for the rules of it, I guess I'll think of something here. I would want to see him take on a different task instead of having to get people out of the house. I would like for him to maybe try to get people to come into the house. I don't know. That would have changed something.
I want to see the Dietzes die, so that way they can live there, like live there together on the same plane.
Okay, okay.
And then Beetlejuice like possesses a human that's moving into the house, so they have to deal with that.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, that would be a good way to flip it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Who did you relate to?
I related to the characters that are designed to suck in this, except for, you know, the three people that you're supposed to like. Do I want to relate to somebody that sucks?
I don't know. Do you?
I'll relate to Adam with his stupid little hobby.
Adam!
Adam. Because I have stupid hobbies. Like, yeah, I openly admit how dumb my interests are, especially with, like, collecting.
That's true.
Yeah.
Obviously, I relate to our moody goth queen, Lydia. Yeah, and if that, you don't draw me as Lydia for this week's art, I'm going to be very upset.
I'll do it. I'll try and make it in a Tim Burton art style, too.
Yay! I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I can do that.
For anybody curious, Travis waits until after we've talked about it to do the drawing because he wants to see if something interesting comes out of the discussion that he can tie into the drawing. So if you weren't aware of that, if you hadn't made that connection before, go ahead and take a look back at previous episodes and see if you can see some of the inspiration for the drawings.
Yeah.
So
fun little game.
Yeah. It's not all of them. Sometimes it's just like I don't know what to fucking do with this, but
sometimes I just have fun with it.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like, all based off of that.
Yeah, like the Mandy one, you were more basing it off the poster than anything, because I did not like that movie.
Well, not only that,
we did not have fun talking about it.
The poster is so fun and it's so colorful. I just wanted to recreate it.
Yeah. But most of them are like definite references to things we talked about.
Yeah.
Okay. So we will have our polls up for this one. Starting Friday.
Yeah, I'm thinking the polls are going to be like unique to the episodes too, because the Twitter one is like which short was best, because we had our own debate about that too.
Yeah.
It'll be something unique for this. I haven't decided, or we haven't discussed it yet, so. But that's
it. For October, we are doing our, you know, daily watch alongs, and we're posting those on our website, and we're sharing the links every week. We're posting it every Friday. So we'll be sharing the links on social media. And if you want to make sure that you don't miss out on any of that, any fun pictures of our pets or drawings or special effects makeup or little Halloween horror collectibles that we buy, you can follow us on Facebook. It's just our name. You can follow us on Instagram, Least Favorite Scary Movie Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Least Fave Pod. For other cool stuff, you can check out our website, which is leastfavoritescarymovie.com.
Yeah.
Is that all of it?
That's
good. Did I get it all? Yep. Okay. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. Why am I doing a word thing if I can't do words?
It's okay. I've already done words worse than you. I hope that comes through on the mic.